Welcome back to Gino Afternoon, which is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Again, KTOO Public Media's Gino Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host, and it's 11:35. I don't know where I came up with that, but Catherine Wilkins from DOT is with us. Catherine's the construction project manager for the Egan Drive 10th to Main project, and you're here to demystify this project for people who have so many questions about what's going to be happening on Egan.
I'm just living and breathing it so much that it's hard for me to see what's the mystery. I know everything.
Right.
But it's just a question of communicating that and getting the word out to the public. So let's start with the easy thing, which is our website, www.egandriveproject.com. And you can go there and see some information as well as sign up to get onto our email list. I think we've done a once-a-week blast the last 2 weeks, and we'll be amping up the public outreach. And then there's also just that you can – there's a Dropbox where you can email us with questions. So there's lots of ways to get information individually that way.
Okay.
So I guess the big question is, what's happening today? What's happening tomorrow? What's
and how long will it happen?
Yes. Oh, it's going to be excruciatingly long. We're going to – you know, the nature of the work is such that it's not really something that can be done in the wintertime. So we're talking about – we talk about seasons. And the season runs from thaw to frost. And so it's a two-season project is what we're anticipating, although at this point certain things might end up going into season three. But it's basically planned for 2019-2020 seasons. What's happening right now? So what we've seen this week is the right-hand lane closed on the inbound just after the bridge to approximately here, Whittier Street, where we're sitting. And that's so that they can do some work on the – you've maybe seen some heavy equipment on the outbound side, mm-hmm. on the – down in the water side. They've been working on culverts and slip lining culverts that go under the roadway. Next week, we will start on the work of tearing out the median. So there will be left-hand lane closures in both directions so that the construction can safely occur in the middle of the median. In the middle of the road. One question that's come up a lot is, why are you doing this during the day? Why don't you do it at night? When there's a giant hole in the road, you can't drive on that part of the road day or night. So the closures would be the same even if we were working at night. And, of course, it's safer for our workers to be working during the day because it's light out.
Mm-hmm.
Logical.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's what you can expect next week,
right,
is to see that median being taken out.
Can I back up for a
sure.
minute and just talk about the overall overarching purpose for the project
Thank
in its
entirety?
Thank you
for helping me to stay focused.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to remember if it's 10th to Main or Main to 10th. But
well, I thought it was 11 o'clock, so no, yeah. So
yeah. What we are doing, I personally lost a tire in front of the Prospector back in around Valentine's Day. The road is unraveling is one of the terms that we used. The condition of the pavement is very, very poor. So that's one thing that needs to be addressed. We're also adding bike lanes. We're widening the sidewalks. The entire roadway will get a slightly wider in some areas. We're building out seaward side, and so that there'll be just a sort of a general shift, which will be kind of imperceptible because it'll be going in staggered in sections. But anyway, that's the big part that'll be done. Between Willoughby and Main, we're going to narrow the road a little bit to just three lanes, one lane in each direction with a chicken lane in the middle, wider sidewalks and bike lanes. So that will actually help traffic to move through a little bit more quickly. If you've ever been stuck behind somebody with the left-hand blinker on, while you want to drive straight through, that'll address that issue. And it is a 20-mile-an-hour zone. So the idea is to have traffic moving at that speed but steady moving through there.
And some of those people take cues from narrowing of roads to decrease speed. That's sort of a
it's actually
thing that
– one of the phrases that they use to describe that is putting a road on a diet, which I thought was a really funny expression. But yeah, when you make a road a little bit narrow where people go slower, and that is desirable in that area. We're adding a couple of pedestrian crosswalks. One will be roughly in front of the Sheraton Hotel, just past the Willoughby intersection, and that will actually have what we call a pedestrian refuge island in the middle. So you can cross halfway and not be in danger if you are stuck in the middle waiting for the traffic to pass on
that
the other
side. That sure seems needed. You certainly see
mm-hmm.
people making that dash
Absolutely.
So often on
so
that area of the road.
So that's going to be that will be a feature that probably I know these things. Definitely won't go in until next year.
Okay.
The other pedestrian crosswalk will be added adjacent to the Gold Creek Bridge on the Foodland side of the intersection where Glacier Highway comes out, next to the Park Shore. So in that area, we're also at crosswalk is really very needed. And I think it'll be lining up with the new Seawalk.
Right. And I was going to ask about the impact on the Seawalk. Is it going to impact access to the Seawalk while it's under construction?
And while then also, construction is underway, sidewalks will be closed at different times. And just we will be putting out signage for pedestrian detours. But yeah, we don't want to see pedestrians walking in the street. We don't want to see them walking through a construction zone. And so sometimes that means you have to take the long way around. That's also true of cars. Vehicles are sometimes going to have to take the long way around. One of the things that people are having a hard time wrapping their arms around is that no left turns will be permitted from this Whittier intersection and also at the Glacier at Foodland area. So the idea is because if you only got one lane, you don't want to be stuck behind that person with the blinker on. Keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving. So that's the idea anyway. But it will mean that Whittier intersection here is going to be dark with no right turns are permitted, left turns are not.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
when you think about this project as the project manager, what are some of the key, what are some of the biggest challenges to it? What are some of the ones where you're like, okay, wow, that is, now that's a big part of this project. Is it like when you go by the Gold Creek Bridge, is that something?
I was thinking about the 4th of July.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So if we're down to just one lane in each direction, and that will be the focus this summer between Willoughby and Whittier, one lane in each direction. So it's kind of a narrow passage there. And we were imagining scenes from a Woody Allen movie with people piling up on each other and whatnot. not a good image. We're working with the contractor actually to temporarily reopen the road 4th of July weekend, we think. Fingers crossed, hopefully, maybe. So, but we are working quite a bit with the police department and the 4th of July committee to try to keep things as normal as possible. Next year, I'm not making any promises about next year, but this year we think we're on track for that to happen.
Okay.
So that's a very good thing.
And then from an engineering standpoint, what are some of the big challenges?
The big challenge from an engineering standpoint is traffic and traffic control and having people move safely through the area. The culverts are just culverts. The sidewalk is just sidewalk. The asphalt is just asphalt. There's nothing. Fortunately, well, Outer Drive, as you know, was built in 68.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. The good news is we're not anticipating that we're going to have any unfortunate archaeological discoveries or that sort of thing, which can really be very disruptive. It's sort of a known entity.
It's recent stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
right.
That should be very straightforward. The project technically is fairly straightforward. The complicated part is the high ADT, average daily traffic, and it is close to 14,000, and that's an average. So there are days when it's more. And then, of course, moving traffic, for example, when we do the intersection at the Douglas Bridge, that's going to have to be night work. It's going to have to be on a weekend. It's going to have to be in the shoulder season. There's just too much traffic otherwise. We won't shut the intersection down completely. You'll still be able to – Douglas will not be cut off.
Right.
Still be able to get on and off the bridge, but only by making a right-hand turn onto the bridge, right-hand turn off the bridge. It's not ideal, but if it's 2 o'clock in the morning in April –
It's less traffic that's affected.
You might not be that upset about
it.
Yeah,
right.
So that is not until next year.
Right. What are some of the biggest concerns you're hearing from people?
The no left turn thing. People are, how am I going to get to the Coast Guard? Well, you're going to loop around Willoughby and back through the light and in and out. And we're watching it closely. If we start to really have significant snarls, then we're going to regroup and, you know, what's our plan B, our plan C, our plan D? We're not like, oh, it's set in stone and that's it. Too bad for you. Capital Transit, we are encouraging people to take Capital Transit and think about carpooling. Capital Transit has revised their bus routes. They've been very proactive about that. Came out yesterday, I believe, with a nice colored map but showing where the new stops are. And like the one in front of the library will be closed. So the buses are going to be running in a different direction. If you're on Willoughby, you can only catch it on the land side, not the seaward side. And anyway, it's just some differences. But Lisa Fu down at the city and with Capital Transit has done a great job getting the word out.
So yeah.
That's been a positive.
Alaska, in the last, say, 10 years or so, maybe even longer, kind of went through a phase of rotary fever. Was there any rotaries considered as part of this plan when you talk about traffic flow and around traffic lights and especially?
Oh, I thought you meant like the Rotary Club and the flags.
No.
No, and that's Friends
or
of the
roundabouts.
Flags anyway. Roundabouts.
Roundabouts. I call them rotaries. I'm from
right,
the East
okay,
Coast where we call them rotaries.
Where were you thinking of putting
well,
a roundabout?
I don't know. I mean, I just wonder whether when you talk about traffic light situations, either at the, you know, it's, there's one on one end of the Douglas Bridge.
There is.
I suppose there could be one on this end.
I think that one of the things about roundabouts, and I know we looked at, so this is a different DOT project, the intersection of Stephen Richards Drive and Riverside gets very backed up. And there's a four-way stop there now. It gets very backed up. And we looked at putting a rotary or a roundabout mm-hmm. there. That would have kept traffic moving. The problem with roundabouts is they take up a lot of space. We would have had to purchase and demolish a number of homes and just determined that wasn't the way to go. So we are right now planning to put a traffic signal there, regular red and green.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I see. Yeah.
And we're looking at putting rotaries, roundabouts, at Stephen Richards on the Loop Road as well as in front of Floyd Dryden. If all goes as planned, knock wood, that will get under construction next summer. That's also my project. You will see traffic flowing much better on the Loop Road once we get roundabouts there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
But here, it's really kind of constrained, the width of the right-of-way and stuff. Those things really take up a lot of room.
Okay.
And we just don't have room for that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of hadn't thought about that consideration part of it. But that's your job, to think about those things.
Yeah. I actually, my background is that I'm an architect. I've only been in this line of work, or that is to say, I've been a construction project manager for many years. I worked at the city and oversaw the construction of Thunder Mountain High School, the Valley Swimming Pool, some other projects around town. And about 5 years ago, went over to DOT and have learned all about roundabouts and asphalt and culverts and great stuff. So
it's been a
very interesting transition and one I've really enjoyed.
Was it a transition? That's an interesting thing to think about, that you really you have this background in building, obviously, and in
construction
and those kinds of things.
Right.
So managing a project to build a road probably has a lot of similarities, but probably things that are very different.
Exactly.
So what are some of the things that are most different about those two fields?
The way projects get priced out on road construction is done by what are called unit prices. And so vertical construction is typically a firm fixed price. How much is it going to cost to build Thunder Mountain High School? And they write down $47.3 million on a piece of paper and turn it in. Whereas with a road, we have estimated quantities, and then they say, okay, so the asphalt is going to cost X number of dollars per ton, and the gravel will be X number of dollars per ton. And then when, in a sense, we manufacture it in the field, a building is made of pre-manufactured parts, like a door or a window or even a piece of sheetrock, gypsum, drywall. Those are all made in a factory and then assembled on site. A road is manufactured on site. That's the equipment that's out on site is literally mixing together gravel and sand and oil and heating it up to a certain temperature and laying it out a certain way. And then machines come across while it's still hot before the mat's fully cooled and compress it to a certain desired thickness. So it's really a manufacturing process. And when you manufacture something in a factory under controlled conditions for temperature and timing and everything, you get a much more even process. Whereas when something's manufactured in the field, it's much more difficult to control. So those are some of the differences that I've seen between vertical and horizontal construction. It's been very, very interesting to sort of have – just sort of to be learning things that are new to me while still having – it's government contracting work that's federally funded, and so rules about transparency and spending public dollars remain the same.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Interesting. Well, on the Egan project, on the Egan Drive to 10th to Main project, any other vital pieces of information you think people need to know?
And... Oh, I'm sure I'll think of 10 things after I get home, but it would be nice to check in with you again in a couple of months. Good luck getting to work, not being able to turn left out here.
Right.
Start thinking about your alternate route.
Shake my fists up to the sky.
Yeah, shake your fist at the sky. Just look forward to having a dedicated bike lane. And if you start biking now, you'll probably be happy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds good. And once again, the website for folks to find out more about the information.
EaganDriveProject.com.
We've also got a link to that on the KTOO website. So if you're on there looking at the other interviews, KTOO/JunoAfternoon, there's a link to that website and the information that's on that website. Catherine Wilkins from DO2, thanks so much for coming in and letting
us
know about that project. And we will take you up on that offer to come back and update us on the project in the next couple of months.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.